Name this evening. It's a privilege to be here and worship with you. It's a privilege to be in the house of God and among God's people. I think it's also a blessing to be in a country setting like this, in a little country church. I like these little, Pilgrim has a couple of them now that are cute little churches, and I like that. It's an inspiration. Tonight's subject, youth and parental perimeters. I must confess that I had committed to come some time back and failed to write it in my date book, and I believe it was a week or two ago, and I think someone from Curtis's family talked about us coming to Winchester, and I was like, wasn't on my book, but fortunately tonight was open and we could make this work. I guess I didn't put enough of a perimeter around this date to keep it open for Winchester. God apparently kept it open for you all, and so I was able to come tonight. Subject of parental perimeters is a subject that possibly strikes some negative thoughts. Perimeters. We're talking about boundaries for youth, lines of direction, rules to follow or restrictions to abide by. And depending where we are in our journey, we don't always smile at this thought. Now, fences, perimeters are fences. Fences generally are made to keep good things in and bad things out. Right? Now, I was just down to visit our brethren in New Mexico, and there they build fences around your property to keep everybody else's cattle out of your property when you're on the open range area. If you want to raise a nice crop of alfalfa and you're in an open range area, you have to put a fence around it to keep everyone else's cows out of your alfalfa. They're not necessarily bad, except it's bad from the sense it would be bad for your alfalfa to be feeding everybody else's cattle. So fences generally have a purpose. Sometimes people put up fences for privacy. There's a number of reasons why you put up fences, but generally the most fences are built for keeping something good in or keeping something bad out. I have a tree place close to us, a nursery not far from us. And I see this year they put up, I don't know what it is, 8 or 10 foot high fence the whole way around their nursery. And I know why. Because many times you see deer hit along the road there coming from the woods over into the nursery. And you know that for every one that's hit, there's probably, 10 others, 20 others, 50 others that were not hit on the road. So keeping bad out. Now fences cost something to put them up, and fences take maintenance. Fences, if you went through school and you learned some of the poems in the literature book, you possibly learned, came across a poem by Robert Frost, "Something There Is That Doesn't Love a Wall." Freezing and thawing tears down a wall, especially like a stone wall. Well, something there is that doesn't love a fence. It tears it down. It takes maintenance. Fences. Now that... The flesh generally prompts us to think almost immediately when a fence is put up, a parental perimeter is put up, there's something within the heart of humans that says there must be something good outside the fence they don't want you to have. You know why that is? That comes straight from Satan. You can trace it all the way back to the garden. God put a fence around. Well, he didn't put a fence. He put a verbal fence around the tree and said, "You may not eat of it." And as soon as that was there, Satan came and said, "God's not very kind to you. He's forbidding you to eat something that'll be good for you." Why didn't Satan say, "You serve a gracious God. He gave you," I don't know how many trees were in the garden, but let's just say 500. "He gave you 500 luscious trees and only forbid one." He could have done it the other way around and said, "There's only one you may eat from." Why didn't Satan say, "He gave you all of that, No, it's the nature of Satan to say, he's a cruel God. He's keeping you from something. You can't trust Satan. You can't trust Satan with what he says about perimeters. So the flesh generally prompts us to think there's something good outside the fence. You ever watch cattle? One of the things that doesn't love a fence is cattle. And they might have ever so much green grass inside, but they want something on the other side of the fence. The other thing that the flesh does to us is it discounts the evil that's outside that would like to get through the fence. It says, oh, it's not so bad. I don't think that would hurt me. I don't understand why Dad and Mom are so concerned about that. It's not a big deal. I can handle it. So it tells us there's something good outside the fence, and it says, don't worry about the evil outside of there. Now, I'd like to ask you a question tonight. Young people, were you ever at a point in life where you struggled with a parental direction? You didn't want to submit to it. How did you feel? Well, you didn't smile, right? You were sad. I was young, and I can identify with that feeling. You try to prove that the fence is at a ridiculous spot. You try to intimidate Dad. Everybody else is doing it. You try to make it impossible to keep the fence. Well, I didn't have any other choice. I had to set up the circumstances so that there's no way to keep this requirement. You ever struggle with that? Now, I'd like to ask you another question. How do you think Satan looks at parental perimeters? When your dad and mom say, here, you may not do this. Do you think Satan smiles and says, oh, I like that fence? No. You know what he does? He's sad. He's angry. He goes about to try to intimidate your dad. He goes about to try to set up circumstances so that you can't keep it. And so that dad finally backs down. The point is this. When I wrestle with a fence, I begin to think like Satan thinks about a parental perimeter. Is that a good place to be? Is that a safe place to be? You want to be in the same camp as Satan? We often don't look at it that way, but that's the way it is. Because Satan knows what good will happen. Satan knows what value is there, and he'd like to fight against it. And I trust tonight that as young people, you're here not struggling against offenses. Because if you are, you're working on Satan with Satan's camp to try to intimidate and push in a corner and make it look ridiculous to keep this fence. Well, I'd like to read this poem. Possibly some of you have maybe even memorized this in school. It's titled Looseness. Now, this poem does not look much at all to the change of heart through Jesus Christ. This poem looks strictly at rules and law, mostly. It does talk about some change, but it goes like this. This is an age of looseness and crime, from heathen debased to the rich of the time. The tendency strong in the church and the state is to go where you please and leave open the gate. It may be that old Dobbin, quite stiff in his knees, will stand in the park, though not tied to the trees, and spitfire the colt that will never be tame, has broken six halters and made himself lame. But will this be excuse to throw halters away, to let each horse decide where to go or stray? Then why do men fight against law and good rules? For guidance of wise and restraining of fools. For horses or men, there is only one hope. If they break their restrictions, just double the rope. And if good rules are wisely applied, they may learn how to stand without being tied. I dislike to see boys not high as your shoulder, that know 10 times more than persons much older. And when father and mother lay down some restrictions, get pouty and sullen and begin to cause friction. I never saw master or miss such a saint, but that they were bettered by parents' restraint. But many a one to the gallows has come for want of a law and a rod in the home. And then when it comes to the laws of the land, so many thus tied will not even stand. Some men for a dollar will take a man's life, or cheat him in trading, or marry his wife, or steal from his neighbor his chains or his axes, or give him short measure, or be dodging his taxes. But in spite of law breaking, there is not a man not constantly helped by the laws of the land. In matters of church, we know very well, no law of itself can save one from hell. Yet, by heeding good laws, a man's ways are made clean and pitfalls avoided that he never had seen. The flesh can be checked and the conscience alarmed, and evils suppressed by which others are harmed. By law, man is brought on this side the grave to the point where the word and the spirit can save. Now, if children are wiser than matron or sire, and safely can play with poison and fire, and loungers in stores with soapbox for stool know better than Congress how nations to rule, and the wisdom of God in one single brother is greater than Bible and conference together, then nail up the church, lay the book on the shelf, and let every man be a law to himself. If opposers of law just only could see, they're cutting a limb twixt themselves and the tree. And if they succeed, they not only will fall, but down will come home, church, nation, and all. If men want no law but their own precious will, let them herd with the bushmen till they get their fill. I think one such year would certainly end it. They would favor God's laws and forever defend it. There's a couple things that I enjoyed reading through this, because we're going to turn to some scriptures. But it says in here, and if good rules are wisely applied, they may learn how to stand without being tied. That is at the core of the goal for parental perimeters. It's about helping children to the point where they internally stand and have internal controls. Before they get to that point, they often need some external helps. Some external helps. Well, you know, even adults are benefited by law and rules and direction. And it just makes things go so much smoother. It just helps us to understand there's so much freedom in law. There really is. Because when you have a fence around this pasture, you're free to go anywhere inside that. You know what the line is. You know where the law is. And all of this is all yours. And so I ask the question tonight. Are you one of those people that looks at the fence and says, why? Why the fence? Or that looks at the pasture and says, thank you for such blessed pastures, precious places to grow up, like we heard in the devotions. Our world is so, well, is decaying so fast. And home is one of the things I believe that Satan has been working on for many, many years, to destroy home and family life. And when he gets that accomplished, he can take down the church. He can take down nations. He can take down many good things when home is destroyed. Turn with me to Lamentations chapter 3. I'd like to read one verse here as we think about this subject of youth and parental perimeters. A couple scriptures we'd like to focus on here at the outstart, and see what we can learn in relation to the value of some of that and how it will help us. And then we'd like to just look at some practical things that parents, areas that parents need to speak to, or things can go astray. Lamentations chapter 3, verse 27 says, "It is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth." It is good for young people to live for God in the yoke of the Christian life, in the yoke with Jesus, in the yoke, may I say, with good parents. That's part of this whole thing of a perimeter. We must understand this, because as parents, okay, like when we want to run beef cattle, you can spend a couple days and you can put up a fence and then build a barn and put, you know, water and feed there, run the cattle in there, and you can go off. You can go off maybe even for a week, and they're fine inside the fence. There's some of that with this thing with parental perimeters, that in our absence, some lines are understood of how we shall live. But I'd like to think about it more like a yoke. That parents and youth are in a yoke. There's closeness. There's, you know, because really dad and mom are in the same fence that the young people are, right? Dad and mom are not doing things that the young people are not allowed to do. Or how does that work if dad and mom can do it, but the young people can't? So no, we're all in this pasture. We're in this yoke together. And these are things that will help us to live right. And let's draw this line here. And in all reality, many of those lines, some of those lines are help. We have help from the church where to draw the line. But not all of them. They're things that as parents we must decide. Sometimes a parent says, here's something. If we only hold the lines that the church holds and nothing more, don't address any other areas that the church doesn't address, we're going to have troubles. Because there's lots of little things that go on in life and family life that are up to fathers and mothers to say, will we do this or will we not? And we can kind of take some clues from some of the lines the church draws and says, well, you know, there's some pattern set up for us. But if we only look at them and say, well, that's the only thing I'll stand on, all these other things I don't know, we're in for some heartache, some disappointment. It is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. Yoke speaks of bridled energy directed to a good cause. That's why you put a yoke on some oxen. You put a yoke on them to take that youthful energy, that not all oxen are youthful, but in this subject with youth, the yoke is about getting it harnessed into good things. And that's part of this whole idea of parental perimeters, because young people like to do lots of things, and if they're not careful, they're doing things that are not so valuable and ignoring things that are most valuable. Energy is spent on things that maybe shouldn't be spent on, or that's wasteful, and things that should have energy spent on are not being done. This yoke speaks of identity with Christ. Remember, his yoke is easy and his burden is light. A yoke makes it possible for a master to direct a not so wise animal to wise, helpful ways and accomplishments. An ox is too dumb to plow a cornfield. He can't do it himself. But a yoke makes it possible. A yoke is the connection, is the thing that allows a master to bridle that and to direct that and to put it to use. And I like that picture as I thought about the yoke with Christ. Bearing the yoke in our youth. It's this thing of allowing God to harness my life for him. Instead of, you know who else wants a harness on our neck? You know who else wants a yoke on it? And his yoke is not easy and his burden is not light. You just watch the community, folks. You watch young men, young women in town. They're in a harness. They do some strange things, some things that are not very comfortable. I see some young men walking around tugging their pants up the whole time. They can't even work. They got one hand busy holding out. That's a yoke. And it's got them around their neck. They wouldn't choose it to be that way, except Satan's kingdom said, that's cool, or that's the thing. And that's what they do. They're in a yoke. Listen, if in God's kingdom, we ask for some things that are as strange as some of the things that Satan's kingdom asks for, there'd be a riot. But when men follow flesh and Satan, they'll do nearly anything. Let's just think about that. How difficult is it to dress decent and drive decent cars? How difficult is that? It's a lot easier than doing some of the strange things that Satan's kingdom calls us to do. You got to keep that in perspective, because while we talk about perimeters, it's nothing compared to the burden and bondage that Satan's kingdom brings. Well, as I thought about this Lamentations 3, this man bearing his yoke in his youth, I've reflected back over my years of teaching school, and you know, I have seen strong parents, good families, direct their children through turbulent years, direct their children through times when there was some bad influences at school, there were some families that were not so good. And these parents, with perimeters and with love and with a connection with their children, these strong parents would guide their children through turbulent years. I've seen that. Through the grace of God, yes, but through wise parenting and God's help and prayer and all of that. But I've also seen parents who had things going pretty much. There wasn't a lot of turbulence, and they lost their children. You couldn't point to lots of bad influences and lots of, you know, bad friends and things that you know, at times parents wring our hands and say, oh my, how will this turn out? And how can I get away? We can't get away from it. I've seen that on both sides of the road. Some who kept their families through difficult times, and their children are strong pillars. And I've seen families lose their children even in good times. And so, what will become of our children? And as we help them to bear the yoke in their youth, to live for God and be faithful even while others are not, and while everyone else is doing what's wrong, to faithfully keep the road. And you'll look back one day. Young people, you'll look back and bless your parents for it. Parents, you'll look back and be glad that you weren't intimidated and backed away from it. All right, let's go to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12 brings out another aspect in relation to perimeters. It's maybe not totally perimeters, but has something to do with parents and authority. Hebrews 12, start reading with verse 5. Hebrews 12:5, "And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children, my son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees," and it goes on. The subject of chastening, this perimeters, has something to do with keeping us from evil and pulling our hearts back from the edge. And he says that good fathers chasten to help them, help sons and daughters to be better. And God the Father does the same thing for us. And he says that one of the realities is at the present time, it's not pleasant. At the present time, maybe it doesn't make sense. At the present time, we wonder why. But afterward, it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness. And so one of the things that we must talk about in relation to perimeters is that sometimes in the middle of it, sometimes as a young person, we don't understand why the fence is here. Why this perimeter? Why must this be required of me? Why mayn't I have this? But disciplines are for our good. They bring about righteousness. Sometimes, and I believe as parents, we need to try to explain and help our children understand why as much as possible. However, there's a snare in that to feel like we have to be able to explain everything to the fullest. Sometimes it's our right for young people to say, "Dad, I will listen, though I don't understand." Sometimes that's all right. Hebrews says it'll be that way, that it won't be pleasant in the moment, but afterward it will yield something. It's not what you would choose, but afterward it yields something. I think we need to be careful. There's a ditch on either side of the road. As parents, I don't think it's wise to just say, "Well, you listen to me, I'm your dad, that's it, I don't need to explain it. You'll know afterward." You can take that too far. Disciplines are for our good. Loving parents care about the lives of their children. Disciplines bond parents and children in family life, and it builds. Now, I'd like you to turn with me to the first chapter of Proverbs. I'd like to just scan Proverbs chapter 1, 2, and 3. Proverbs is a book of parental perimeters. A father, Solomon, writing to his son, and perhaps his son's mother writing as well. So you read the book of Proverbs, I believe that you can see both parents caring about this. Well, what is a proverb? A proverb is something to give wisdom. He says in Proverbs 1, verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction, to receive instruction in verse 3. Verse 4, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. That's part of parental perimeters. To give wisdom. Help understand what's right and what's wrong. Look at verse 8. My son, hear the instruction of thy father and forsake not the perimeter of thy mother. Forsake not the law of thy mother. Verse 15, my son, walk not thou in the way with them. He's talking about evil men, sinners. If they entice thee, consent not. Walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path. That's offense. He said, you may not go with a wicked man. That's what he did. He said, this is how the wicked man acts. He'll want you to go with him. He'll want you to lurk in the way and capture an innocent and take things from them. And you're not allowed to go. That's the law. Listen on me, because it'll be for your good. If you go down to chapter 2, verse 1. My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee. That sounds to me like internal controls. Getting to the point where father and mother's commandments are now in my heart and they guide me. What they taught me to do, I will do. What they taught me not to do, I will not do. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 1. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. And he goes on. Listen to his directions. Verse 3. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. If you want an interesting study, go through the Bible and find all the places where mercy and truth come together. Mercy and truth. When I went to New Mexico the other weekend, I went with John Michael Nault. He's from Little Kutztown, from more like a brethren type of setting. And we had some interesting discussions and talks. And he told me that the Brethren Church is big on mercy and light on truth. And the Mennonite church is big on truth and light on mercy. And the Bible teaches mercy and truth together. Here the proverb writer says to his son, let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Hold on to them. You need them. Verse 5, trust. You trust in the Lord with all your heart. That's a commandment. Son, do this. Daughter, do this. In all thy ways, acknowledge him. Listen, verse 7, be not wise in thine own eyes. Don't be lifted up in pride that you think you got it figured out. Don't be wise in your own eyes. Listen unto your superiors and to those older. Verse 9, honor the Lord with thy substance. Give in the offering, the dad said. That's what he said. Verse 11, my son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, and don't be weary of his correction. Accept it. It's coming your way from God. You listen to it. This is a father, mother, putting perimeters on the son, saying, son or daughter, saying, look, here's what you need. Verse 21, my son, let them not depart from thine eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion. Verse 27 is a practical perimeter he put around him. He says, withhold not good from them to whom it is due when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. In other words, if you owe this man something, he worked for you today, and he's looking for pay at the end of the day, don't tell him come back next week. You have it in your pocket. Pay him. And he goes on to explain about that. He says, this is not the way to act. You don't act like that. You pay him. You take care of him. Verse 29, devise not evil against thy neighbor. Don't make a plan to destroy your neighbor. Verse 30, strive not with a man without cause if he have done thee no harm. Stay out of fighting. Verse 31, and envy not thou the oppressor and choose not of his ways. Don't look at the man who rips the community off and say, I want to get rich like him. How can I learn it? Don't do that. And you could go all through Proverbs and you have a father, you have a mother saying, look, do this and do not do that. Do this and do not do that. I thought about just using the book of Proverbs and going through and looking at that, but we'll not do that. We see a father setting perimeters. Why? And for what purpose? For the blessing of his son. For the direction of his son. For the wisdom that his son would benefit from it. Now let's talk about some parental perimeters. And there's probably things that I've missed, things that you think about. But I thought about this subject and I said, so what are the things, what types of perimeters, what types of guidelines, where are the areas that parents draw lines? And so tonight, possibly you're here as a parent of youth, you think about, what am I doing? Do I give any direction on this subject? Or possibly you're here as a young person tonight, and you say, no wonder my dad or my mom gives me direction on that, because even Brother Luke says parents should talk about that subject and give some lines. Well, one of the things, even from Proverbs there, one of the things that I think about is friends, direction about friends. The proverb writer was jealous that his son would not hang out with bad people, but would spend time with good people. Friends and acceptable activities. It's one of the things that as parents we need to give direction to our youth, because friends influence tremendously. Friends influence tremendously. And sometimes, even in a church setting like ours, you have some young people who are not making good choices. What do you do? There needs to be enough of involvement to reach out and care about them, but there are times that you need to address the situation and say, look, with that kind of language, my son cannot ride with you. Or with that kind of music, I can't let, something's going to need a change. I believe as parents, we need to have some discussions about that. I think it's damaging if we just, do it silently, say, well, I'm not going with him anymore, and nobody really. We need to face those things. Maybe a father needs to talk to the father of the struggling youth and say, look, some things here are not good, and I will not allow my son to ride with your son because of this and this. It needs to change because I don't want that influence. then the other father has opportunity to work on it and see if something can change. But friends and acceptable activities. Parents should know their children's friends. This is one of the struggles we have today because of electronic friendships. Friendships are broad across the United States. And my children know people from California, and I went to Bible school with them and keep up with them. And it's great. As far as I know, there's good influence there. But so we struggle with that sometimes. But we need to, as much as possible, think in these terms, that as parents, we need to also know and have some time with the young people that our youth run around with. So the young friends of our youth ought to be okay to come over to our house. We ought to have a doggy roast with the young people that our young people run around with. And if they won't come to our house, now some of us are so busy and you can hardly make it happen, and that's a problem in itself at times, but we need to think about this. Because parents need to know something and be able to guide that. And then sometimes young people come home talking about things, and something happened, and something maybe bad happened, and then we need to talk to them. Well, so how did you respond to it, and what did you say? What kind of influence were you? And maybe help them prepare. So if this comes up again in the future, what will you say? How will you stand? What can you do for that young person? Parents need to be involved with friends and activities and the things that are going on. Another area that parents should give direction to is reading materials. What kind of reading materials? What kind of magazines? What kind of books? What kind of... Do you know? Do you know what's there? Do you know what they're enjoying? How will that influence them? What will that do to them? You know, I've often said this sometimes with teaching school and choosing books to read for story time or library work. One of the things that the way a book is set up, generally speaking, a storybook is set up, that when you pick up that book to read, you're supposed to identify with the main character and feel what they feel, hear what they hear, and experience what they experience. So one good test is, am I okay with my child living exactly like the main character? So am I okay with my child reading a cowboy story, riding out west in old western days with the six-shooter on their belt and all that went with that? Is that what I want them growing up, feeding on this, imagining themselves riding the horse and doing all that the main character did? Are you okay with them doing that? If you're not, then you shouldn't read the book. Now, once in a while, maybe often, there are stories where someone who was outside of Christ has some experience and comes to the Lord. And so maybe there is an evil character that experiences salvation. And so maybe the first part of the book, but those books, well written, don't glorify the evil, but highlight the change of life and what that did in God's kingdom. And so there may be some of that, but it's one simple test to ask myself. Mother, read the book and ask yourself, would you be okay with your daughter doing what the main character did? And if you're not, if it's marginal, if it's stuff that you would, then why should we read it? I know you can turn that around to Bible stories and say, okay, so are you okay with your son reading Samson? Is he okay with him doing everything that Samson did? And I know I'll stammer and stutter and okay, it's the Word of God. And I'll be up front with that. Some of the things that you read in the Bible, I don't want my child to be like that man was, okay? Somebody recently told me that he was reading in his devotions, and he read about a suicide bomber that killed more people in his death than in his life. And it was Samson. He said, you know what? And he's in the Heroes of Faith chapter. What do you do with that? And so there is that aspect, and I want to be honest with that. But when we read stories, and writers have designed that we would read through that story and identify with the character, we should evaluate it by, is that a good thing for us to do? Another thing that parents often give, and maybe this should have been attached with the friends and acceptable activities, but parents often talk about curfew time. At what time must young people be back to the house? Why? You know why? Because somehow young people don't have the same clock built in them that moms and dads do. And hours and hours get away, and it's not always wise for their health. It's not always wise. You know, I heard a bishop from another church group one time said that ministers' meetings should never go past 10 o'clock. School board meetings should be shut down at 10 o'clock because after 10 o'clock, your good powers of judgment shut down. You know what? There's a lot of truth to that. Now, sometimes there's still some work to be done, and it seems like men have some good powers of judgment. I'm not saying that I think that should be, but I think we need to think about that. Because I think that's one of the same reasons why a curfew is important, because after a certain time, good powers of judgment shut down, even for young people. Late nights and early mornings. So curfew times. Another thing that parents often give direction to is spending or saving money. How do they spend their money or save their money? Purchase choices, clothing, toys, cars. Parents should be involved in that and have some direction on that. And because there again, left to ourselves as young people, what will it look like? You know, as adults, we know some of the challenge, some of the burden of starting a family and purchasing a property or renting or paying a mortgage. And you know, most adults look back and say, you know what, if I'd only saved a little bit more in my youth and put that toward good things, and, you know, where would I be today? Young people don't see that yet. And so they need some parents to help them in that. And another area might be music. I touched on that a little bit in riding together. Music and games. Parents should give direction to that. What kinds of things catch my ear? And but one of the realities is that with the passing of time, sometimes music styles change. While I've taught school, I've never been strong on music and good singing. I mean, I enjoy congregational singing and chorus singing. I enjoy it tremendously. But as far as you know, the styles and as far as some of the elements of music has not really been something that I've studied into. I've been around long enough to see at one point in time, hey, this is good music and this is what we ought to sing. And then a little shift, and then a little shift, and a little shift. And some of the things, with time, some things have changed, and I don't understand all the dynamics of that. But one of the things that I do know it affects is sometimes the music that I enjoy from my youth is different. There's a little difference. But I do raise the question sometimes, why? Where is it leading us to? Where will it all go? I'm simply saying that to say, as parents, sometimes there's some change. We need to evaluate it. Is it a good change? Where is it going? And is it militating against congregational singing and worship? That's one of the big tests that we should put our music to. Is it upbuilding? Is it, do the words inspire my soul and help me to love God more, or is it an emotional experience? Music and games. What kind of games do we enjoy? What kinds of, when the youth group gets together, what kind of games do we play? And if the world saw us playing those games, would it make sense to them? We could put that same test to the music thing. If the world listened to my music, would it make sense to them that, yes, this is a child of God? Or would they be shocked? Another big area in our day today is phones and social connections. Email, text, Voxer, WhatsApp, and the list goes on. What kinds of connections? What kinds of What kinds of visiting? What kinds of influences? What kinds of things are going on? As parents, we need to... It's one of those things that if we do nothing, we know nothing. What are we doing? And young people, we should be open with those things. We should be talking about those things. We should not be... You know, there was a day when in our home, when I was a youth at home, we had one telephone mounted on the wall, and it had maybe a 20-foot cord that could reach to the kitchen so Mom could talk on the phone and tend the food on the stove if she was making supper and needed to tend to something. But if you were going to talk on the phone, you're going to have an outside connection. It was going to be done across that thing right there. Couldn't get very far from it. You could go in through to the living room and close the door, but Mom knew you were on the phone. Not so in our day. You can call, you can talk, you can find private times, you can make connections, and parents need to know something about that. There's good filter systems, there's good accountability, there's ways that we can do that. But young people, you must be open to it. If you fight against that thing, there's ways you can hide that. There's ways you can get around your parents that'll only hurt you. There's no need to hide if everything is above board. Another area is work, evangelism, and play, and the balance. How much work? How much play? How much evangelism or Christian service? How do we put that all together? Parents should have some input into that and find a balance. Find the... making sure that young people are learning. They're learning to work. You know, in our day today, our society is moving away from wanting to work hard. When I was servicing generators, numerous farmers would tell me, you can't find Americans to work in a chicken house. You can hire Mexicans or other immigrants, but not Americans. They don't come out of high school willing to do what needs to be done to raise eggs and tend a chicken house. I believe that our young people need to learn to work and work hard and be okay with it. We have it so easy and we are so soft in our day today, and that might not always stay. You go to other countries and you see them carrying things on their back and walking for miles. I remember before we left Honduras, we lived there. We had some bicycles, some old bicycles that weren't worth bringing back. And I gave them to a couple of the natives. And I gave one to a man and his wife. And they had two children. And he was so delighted. He acted the way an American would act if you gave them an automobile. He just tears in his eyes. He was so delighted. And, you know, it was just an old bicycle. But it did have a child seat on the back, so the one child could sit in that. It was a man's bicycle, and I was told later by someone that was from our mission there that he would frequently ride that thing the 8 miles into town, and you could see them riding. He would ride the bicycle like normal. His wife would sit sideways on the center bar, that little 3/4 inch or less bar, sideways, and hold the oldest of the children on her lap, while the littlest one sat in the, or the other way around, maybe the oldest one in the car seat thing on the back. And they would go into town and then they would buy groceries and they would bring a bag of groceries along back. And they would go to, 8 miles into town and back home. They were so delighted because they could, now they didn't have to pay the bus fare to go into town. They could ride into town themselves, get their things and ride home. You know why we buy bikes in America? For a pleasure ride, not to ride 8 miles to town to get groceries. I doubt if any one of us here used a bike in the last 10 years to ride 8 miles into town to buy groceries. If times got hard and things changed, we'd have to buckle down and we'd have to change our mentality. Most of us would try to figure out a way to rig a motor on to make it go easier or something like that, but then you got to buy fuel to put in it. I'm talking about parents helping young people to learn to work, learn to serve the kingdom, balance that out and not just have a joyride in life and play and live off of others and all of that. Well, another area I think that parents need to give direction to is words and expressions. Words, slang words. There's a word, and maybe I should just get over it, but I'm going to throw this warning out. There's a word that is common among our youth that I think is unbecoming to God's people, and it's the word to call someone a dude. Hey, dude, what are you doing? That is unbecoming. I remember teaching Bible school a number of years ago in Mississippi, and then later in the summer, we had a Bible school reunion. We were at Shepherd's Fold at the pavilion. I'm sitting with my wife at one of the picnic tables. And here comes a young man that was at Bible school, a struggling youth. Spiritually, he was struggling. He comes by, but he had the interest to say hello to me. And he comes and he just stops on the other side of the picnic table. He says, "Hey, dude, how are you doing?" Is that how you address a minister who taught Bible school? But you know what? If dude becomes common to call each other that, that's what we'll call the bishop. We're going to have a dude preach for us this morning. Really? I want to ask you something. Where did dude come from? Where did it come from? You go look it up in the dictionary. It will tell you that it had its origin in the West, when the rough and tumble cowboys had to live like a cowboy had to live. And a city slicker came out there who didn't know anything about surviving in the West. They called him a dude. He's a misfit in the West. That's where it came from. So, was I a dude at the Shepherd's Fold picnic? I kind of was a misfit. If dude is coming, I am a misfit. Maybe I'll go home. I wish we would clean that out of our language. I wonder sometimes what the world thinks when they hear us. It's hard, though, to get their opinion because they're intimidated by us. They feel like we have it right and they have it wrong. It's hard to get their opinion. Every once in a while, you have a worldly man that you're friends with, you have a connection, that it's safe to ask some of those questions. And you ought to do that. You ought to ask them and hear their input. They're not always right because they're not guided by godly wisdom. So you got to sort through that. But every once in a while, a worldly man will tell you something and tell us, you know what? I'm surprised a godly man would use that. Cool expressions. Well, jobs is another area that parents, the exposure that's on jobs and the work that's there, fellow employees, parents should have some interest in that and some direction in that and be guiding them. Now, that's enough of the practical things. But one of the things I'd like to say, having looked at just whetted our appetite with some of the things that parents need to give direction to, is that the attitude toward perimeters will determine how much value they are to us. And I like to think about that in two ways. One is the attitude of the parents, and one is the attitude of the young person. If the parents' attitude is one of love and concern and desire for the good of the youth, it will go a long way. But if it's one of, look, I want to lay down a rule so I can go on with my life, and you know what? Look, you know what the rule is. Behave, and I don't want to be bothered by you anymore. It's not going to work. So, as parents, we must have the love and concern and the interest of our youth in mind. And for young people, we must have an attitude of submission and acceptance. And the attitude toward perimeters will determine how much value they are to you. I'd like you to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Apostle Paul... 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 23, says this: "All things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things are not." One of the realities of parental perimeters, as we've talked about some of these things, Some parental perimeters will not be about issues of right and wrong. Some will be on things to cut out things that are not unlawful, but simply don't edify. Paul said there's some things in life that are lawful, but don't edify, and I'll not be brought under them. I believe that another place he says he won't be brought under the power of any. Maybe that's in another passage. I believe 1 Corinthians 6 talks about that as well. And so there are some things in life sometimes that are not sinful, but they're not helpful. A good, clean comedian is not sinful. He didn't say anything bad. But when you're all done laughing, what did it do? Okay? A good show, be it a horse show, sportsman show, an air show. I got an email from Brother Sim in Georgia, and he had this little clipping about, I believe it this past week, the Navy Blue Angels had an accident and lost a pilot, and the Air Force Thunderbirds, those are all specialty planes that they fly to show, and they lost a plane. Perhaps the pilot made it out of that one. One of those the pilot made it, one of those the pilot didn't. I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands how many people were ever at air show. I saw the Blue Angels fly over Pensacola, Florida once when I was down there visiting. And it was part of an air show, and we were on the edges of it, and so you could see what they were doing, flying in formation and all that. But Brother Sim had the question, is an air show for non-resistant people? Because the news article about losing these planes said this, that it is well worth it, even though just the, Air Force Thunderbirds alone costs America $35 million a year. It is well worth it. Even if you spend $35 million and you lose a pilot once in a while, it's well worth it. Why? Because it makes people smile when they see planes in the air. No, it is their number one recruitment tool for the Air Force and the Army. What are we doing at an air show watching the Blue Angels? What are we doing? Okay, it's not sinful, right? I didn't break any commandments. Is it lawful? Is it expedient? Does it edify? Does it send the right signal in the world? These are some of the things that sometimes when parents give direction about, young people struggle. So why? But we must understand that while many things are lawful, not all things are expedient, not all things edify. And sometimes we need to draw lines. Even the subject of wine, the Bible will tell you that it's not sinful to take wine. All things are lawful, but all things are not expedient. Someone recently told me, he did a little research on people who have left the Mennonite faith and gone out into the world, and how many of them have got steeped in drinking and really got themselves messed up with strong drink. And he said this, I believe we don't preach much at all about strong drink in our circles because it's so much not part of us, right? And when someone leaves and goes out into the world, they don't realize they haven't been taught the evils and the vice. And some of them have gotten caught in it because they were not taught. I haven't preached against strong drink because it almost seems like there's other issues that are more important. But it's not unlawful. It's not expedient. And it has things that will take us. Well, I'd like to close with just thinking about the value of parental perimeters a little bit. Number one, it teaches godliness and holiness. Parental perimeters should be to help us to be more like God and to be more where God wants us to be. It's not native to our desires to be like God. We won't grow up that way naturally, left to ourselves. You know that the bias of nature is toward the wilderness. You let any piece of land alone, and it's wilderness. And you let any heart alone, and it's wilderness. Without law and discipline and the grace of God in our lives and his following his spirit, it's wilderness. So it teaches godliness and holiness. It protects from undue exposure to evil. That's one of the big things, undue exposure to evil. Because oftentimes youth are naive. They don't realize the danger that is there. They don't realize how binding that is. They don't realize how hard it is to say no in that moment of test. And so, you know, on one hand you think, well, I'm strong, I won't be tempted. But in the face of it, you can't hardly say no. There are some things. There are some sins, some vices, some temptations that when excited within the heart, it's almost impossible to say no to. You get to a point, it's like climbing on a sliding board, and after you start it, you can stop yourself, but you're going to pay a price to get stopped midway down the sliding board. And there are some things in life that are that way. So it protects from undue exposure to evil. And then after the exposure, after the indulgence, after the reality of the price, the reality of the stigma, the reality of the lifelong scar is overwhelming, because a naive youth. And you read Proverbs and he'll talk about the strange woman and what that does. And young people often don't understand all the things that are part of that. So it protects from undue exposure. Number three, it controls youth in their immaturity until they learn personal restraint and greater maturity. We talked about that in the palm. That when these things, when these parental restraints are well done and God is in it, and a young person humbles their heart and loves the Lord and loves their parents and receives a direction, it becomes a part of them. It curbs their carnality and foolishness. It makes them think through their choices and deeds. It makes them start to make the decisions in here that mom and dad were making for them when they were putting these perimeters there. I would say this. The sooner your internal controls take over, the sooner external restraint can be relaxed. That's just how it works. So if you think, oh my, I want some freedom. Listen. Strap yourself down in obedience and holiness and godliness and hold yourself to it faithfully and do that. Stay focused on that and you'll be surprised how soon some of the externals can be relaxed. You don't need that law from dad because you have the law from within. But most of the times the reason that we don't want dad's law is because we want to go and get that. We want to go and indulge in that. How soon can I get out from underneath that? Because I want that. And that's the reason why we find that restraint. And I would say to parents, it's a good thing to have a gradual process of release. A gradual process of giving a little rope and seeing how well do they do with that. And giving them some opportunity. And then if there's failure, if there's getting into things they shouldn't, then maybe we've got to pull it back a little bit. Say, look, you know, this pulled some privileges because I can't trust you. You need, and there's this growth. It doesn't happen overnight. Number four, it teaches good habits that will bless youth for life. Good responses, good patterns for life. You just get involved in counseling people who didn't have good home life. Get involved in counseling people who had little or no restraint from parents. And listen to the stories. Listen to the vices. Listen to the scars. Listen to the thoughts. Listen to the regrets. Listen to the heartache. Suddenly you start to realize what a blessing it is to have parents who kept us from so much trash. Look at their plight. Look at how hard it is to take a new route in life. Look at how hard it is to establish new patterns. It takes years and lots of hard work. I return to Lamentations. It is good for a man that he bears the yoke in his youth. And he learns this is life. This is life with God. This is how we ought to live. And learns that pattern and knows nothing else. Knows nothing else. Well, last of all, it equips youth with an example how they will need to do to be responsible for children and youth in the future. And that's the handing over of the torch to the next generation to teach the children of the next generation. And so one of the benefits, one of the things that is so needed with parental restraints is that it needs to be done in such a way that then as children have children themselves, they look back and they say, I see now why Dad had that rule. I understand that. Okay, Dad, Mom did it this way. Well, you know what? And we can learn from that. We leave a pattern for the next generation about what it takes to propagate the faith, what it takes to raise families for God. So it equips youth with an example of what they'll need to do. And sometimes they get involved in that in small ways before they are parents. It might even, we might say on this point that it equips youth to understand how to, maybe it's a children's ministry like a Bible discovery class, how to work with children, town children, and give, you know, hold some lines of discipline and what's acceptable, and it equips them for that. Maybe it equips them for school teaching and how to work with children, because how did my parents work with me? What was the value of lines in my home? Look, you just try to teach school without any lines and you'll understand why your parents had some lines. Because in reality, I think it's much easier with a family that's related and we're all brothers and sisters. It's easier to have less rules than when you take children from 6, 8, 10 families and throw them together all the same age. Suddenly you have the chemistry for trouble without perimeters. And so as parents, one of the things we do for youth growing up is give them an example. What to do with rules, what to do with order, and it will equip them to be faithful and have faithfully do their part and have faithful families in the future. When Jesus comes, will he find faith on the earth? Will he find it in our children? Will he find it in the next generation? Whatever generation Jesus returns, will he find faith? May the Lord bless. May the Lord bless you as parents, as you guide your young people, and young people, as you listen to your parents. Value their laws and direction and take it to heart and benefit by it. Shall we kneel for prayer?